For much of the last century, British politics has been dominated by two major parties, the Labour government and the Conservatives. But today, that picture is beginning to change. Parties like the Liberal Democrats, Greens and Reforms are gaining popularity and in some polls are starting to challenge the likes of Labour and Conservatives. Under Starmer as well, it can also be argued that the Labour side has had a bigger shift on their political spectrum, more to the central. We're going to need somebody every week, as we do on the Oval Office, to help us understand more on these parties. So we have Head of Wellbeing and current party member of Labour, Mr. Morris, here to discuss the party's history and impact in recent years and to help us decipher it all. Mr. Morris, thank you very much for joining us.
Pleasure to be here.
Go. So basically, the first thing that we want to discuss is history of Labour. And we want to discuss your history in Labour and why you are a really strong supporter. If you could just give us some kind of background information, anything you like.
Yeah, so I grew up in the 1980s and 90s. My parents were both teachers in the state sector. And I grew up in a Labour supporting household. So I'm descended from Irish immigrants. My dad has got very strong principles around fairness, social justice, protecting workers' rights. And that's the background I grew up in. I joined the Labour Party in the run-up to the last leadership election. I was nervous about the direction that the party had gone in under Jeremy Corbyn and the momentum group within the party. And I was worried that Labour, had they continued in that way, would become unelectable for a long period of time. So I joined the party to vote for Keir Starmer as leader because I saw a lot of potential in him as a leader of the party. And since joining the party and becoming a member, I've been fairly involved locally. So I took a part in the general election campaign, the last one, and I'm secretary of the local Labour branch. I'm still relatively involved in the party.
Mm. Well, obviously, we think that you must have a lot of knowledge and experience to help us kind of understand a few things that we wanted to ask about Labour, which was firstly on this spectrum change, which is a huge point, which is that Starmer, essentially, in his time, seems to have shifted Labour more away from what you were talking about with Corbyn, more left-wing, into more central ideas. And I wanted to ask on your opinions on that. Do you think that this shift to more central is the right way forward to Labour's success? Do you think that that's something that you view as a positive?
I do. And the reason for that is, in order to make change, you need to be in power. And the electorate in Britain, the majority of the electorate are centrist. So in order, as I say, to bring about important, meaningful social change that benefits the majority, you can't do that from an extreme political position. So you have to adopt centrist policies and centrist perspectives in order to then be in a position to bring about change.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point. And as you mentioned, you joined the Labour Party due to you believing that Corbyn was going away from those kind of, the positions which you thought the Labour should be going towards. Do you still see Starmer necessarily as the person doing that as such in the way that you saw him back then? Or do you think he's actually shifted his narrative?
So I think Starmer has been is fairly consistent in his position. So I don't pick up on any meaningful shift since he was elected prime minister. What really troubled me about Labour in the wake of the 2019 general election was that we were advocating for policies that A, were going to spook the bond markets and cause economic problems like we saw under Liz Truss, and B, we're just going to not get us elected. That's why I don't see a major change in Starmer's positions. Right. I think he is in his bones a centrist.
Right. Do you think that necessarily a centrist leader should be leading a party which is potentially not necessarily central?
It's such an interesting question about Labour. So the party is a really, really broad church. So you do have people on the left of the party who are deeply committed socialists who would advocate for policies such as a maximum wage, would advocate for policies on increased taxation, and who would argue for much more aggressive wealth distribution. And then there are people on the right who are almost close to One Nation Tories. So it is exceptionally broad as a party. And that's been the fascinating thing for me, having become a member and being involved in like local Labour WhatsApp chats and the wider discussions in the party, is seeing just how broad the party is. But I think Starmer's taking the right line through that challenge of being in a broad church, which is trying to hold that centre ground.
Yeah,
this is something actually that I wanted to also ask on. The breadth of the Labour Party that you're talking about shows that there's, I mean, obviously we saw in the election the huge, huge landslide majority that Labour had won by. However, if we look at polls now, we see a huge rainbow now. We have the Lib Dems, Greens, Reform, Conservatives and Labour all winning in different constituencies, which creates now a question that we've never been asking before in politics, which is, you know, where on earth is the election going to go in a few years' time?
Yeah.
And that's something that I kind of wanted to touch base on. Do you think the reason behind all of a sudden these parties rising is because of a failing Labour government?
No, I think it's a longer standing dissatisfaction amongst the population with the way that politics and politicians can make a change in people's lives. So since the global financial crisis, the country has been worse off, and it's been harder and harder for politicians to make meaningful difference to the lives, particularly of working people. And we're seeing this growing resentment and mistrust of politics. And I think that's why we're seeing the splintering of the vote. And obviously we've got two populist parties, Reform, and people will disagree with me for saying this, but I think the Greens under Polanski are a populist party.
Yeah,
I agree with that.
On the left. Populist parties offer simple solutions to complex problems. And people find that appealing, particularly, and I'm going to sound like an old git now, but in an age of social media where messaging is simplified, I think people find that appealing. So I think we're seeing that splintering, growing dissatisfaction with politicians and politics, lack of awareness of the impact that politicians have on people's lives, and a social media which fuels outrage, hate, and so on, which makes populism more appealing.
I think that's actually a really interesting point to pick up and look at on the kind of wider scales. So, as you mentioned, Keir Starmer kind of took the party towards a more centralist view. Mm. What it seems is like the population is actually moving out on the spectrum. Because they're unhappy, they're moving out to the wider sides. So in a party that's looking for success, and obviously they've already been elected, but they want to be re-elected next election and so on.
Yeah.
Do you not think the direction is actually moving out to those far sides rather than just trying to cover the middle if the population is going out?
Yeah, and the course of the challenge of that, and this is, I mean, you know, your question reveals how hard governance is.
Of course, yeah.
And I don't think there's much of an appreciation of just how difficult it is to govern. But of course, if they get pulled to satisfy people on the left and people on the right, they're pulled into contradiction.
Of course.
And then everybody accuses them of hypocrisy, contradictions, U-turns. And you know, we have a media in Britain which is, you know, is rightly keen on holding our politicians to account, but they're pretty hostile. I mean, you have to listen to the Today programme on Radio 4 every morning. You get the politicians in, they absolutely go for them. The phrase that was used so much during the last election campaign was of Keir Starmer carrying a Ming vase across an ice rink. He was just trying to delicately balance everything and just not smash the vase. So I think it's incredibly difficult to speak in a way that brings the far reaches of political opinion into the, so that people feel like they're being heard. I just think it's possible to do that.
I like the smashing the vase on thin ice, and that's something that I would bring up in really recent time with a huge uprising against Starmer in recent weeks. We saw the Scottish Labour calling for Starmer to go out. Luckily, backed by his cabinet, though, Starmer kept the job. Now, in my eyes there, that seemed like the Labour government kind of looked into the void and saw, is there going to be anyone who's going to then come out of it and be better than Starmer?
Yeah.
And everyone kind of thought, maybe not. But then they also looked in and thought, well, if Starmer goes, does that mean that I keep my job in cabinet?
Yeah.
And they probably thought, no.
Yeah.
So therefore, Starmer kept his job. Do you think that he's still on that incredibly thin ice, especially as we've seen with the by-election in Gorton being won by the Greens, that huge loss for Labour? Do you think that these trends are continuing into a Starmer sack?
So I hope not.
Yeah.
I think Starmer is doing a good job in incredibly difficult circumstances. But the thing that I think there's been a real shift in British politics, I think, since 2016, when we had a succession of prime ministers, all of whom were in very precarious positions. So we've kind of got used to looking at our prime ministers differently. So, you know, we had Margaret Thatcher prime minister for well over a decade, Tony Blair prime minister for a decade. So we were living in a time back then of prime ministers serving for a long time. And then 2016, obviously Cameron resigns after Brexit. Theresa May, short-lived. Boris Johnson, short-lived. Liz Truss, short-lived. So we got used to a quick turnover of prime ministers. And I think it's important that Starmer holds his nerve and we try to move out of this sense of prime ministership being a precarious role, because it creates so much instability and uncertainty for ordinary people.
Mm.
There are some good, like, potential successors. I'm a big fan of Andy Burnham. I'm mostly for his role in the Hillsborough inquiry. I'm a Liverpool supporter, and yeah, he played a significant role in getting the truth out about what happened in Hillsborough. I think he's been brilliant as a mayor of Greater Manchester. He's a potentially very good successor. I'm also a big fan of Angela Rayner. But yeah, I think it's important that we have a period of stability. And that Starmer holds his nerve, and he's a pretty awesome human being. Like, if you read there's a very good biography of him. You know, the adversity he's gone through to get to where he's got to, he's quite an extraordinary person.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting topic. Absolutely. How much uncertainty there currently is about Starmer standing up to that adversary and shutting it down, making sure that he's able to run his party effectively, making sure that he's able to deliver exactly what he's supposed to be doing. And that needs to be tightened for sure as of now, as there's all of this uncertainty. And something that kind of turns this into a more global side of things, which is what we really like to do on this podcast, is by talking about how this looks in global politics, on the global political stage. And I think that Starmer's perspective on Iran has been really interesting in holding his point to what he stands for, because of how he's held up against the likes of Trump, putting humongous pressure on him in the Strait of Hormuz, and his use of military bases as well in the region. He's clearly held his word against him, and he's clearly got Iraq in the back of his mind, and he's stuck to that, which I think is very interesting as a prime minister, to be able to do that, to show that you're not going to back down to a superpower like America despite your relationship, and hold your national interest, which I think in the grand scheme of things, most people in the UK would agree that that was the right thing to do.
Yeah.
I think now if we look at Iran as a whole,
I think it was the right decision to not get involved.
Exactly. Intervention.
Agreed.
Intervention in Iran would have then, that's something that I'm sure the Iranians would have liked to do, right? Because that's in their ideology, that it's the world basically against them, and it's them legitimizing that by seeing the likes of the UK now striking them, Spain, France, all of these European countries are out to get them. That basically shows that's their evidence, right, for saying this is the world attacking us, right? We were right.
I think one really key point to pick up on there, though, is he has held his own in the later stages of this, and he's definitely denied certain things of Trump, etc. You do have to go back to like the first week of it, where he initially did decline the use of UK bases, but then did accept it. Yeah. So although he has more majority held his own against Trump, he has also conceded way, which I think partially allows people to pay this way for his U-turning in policies, things like that, which you do need to look into.
Yeah.
Necessarily, though, in the current, as you said, the media plays a massive role, things like that. Is it possible for a prime minister, for example, to hold their own when you've got so much adversity coming towards things like that? Is that possible? You have to concede somewhere, which I think is where you can kind of reason against his U-turns. Yeah. I mean, what do you...
Yeah, I think the first thing to say is there's a whole load of pressure that we don't get to see.
Of course.
So what's clear about the Trump regime is they operate via effectively bullying, threat, punishment. That's how Trump operates. So he gets what he wants by threatening people and punishing them if they don't do what he says. So obviously there was that shift in position for Starmer over the first 48 hours of the conflict. And the turning point seems to be the drone strikes in Cyprus.
Of course.
And I think it's a reasonable position to say we will allow the use of US air bases in Britain and elsewhere to help defend UK national interests and others. There are some, I think, open questions about what those B-1 Lancers and B-52s are actually dropping ordnance on when they leave RAF Fairford.
I've got them flying over me.
They're quite something to see them in the sky.
It's a bit off topic, but when he comes over my house, the whole house shakes. It's crazy. Yeah.
Well, I grew up in Gloucestershire, so I remember the first Iraq war in the early 90s and seeing those things fly over, and they are vast. So there's an open question about whether those missions are actually defensive. I was really impressed with Starmer holding his line and being clear that the war is illegal, that it goes against international law. I think you're absolutely right, Will. He has got Iraq at the front of his mind. There was James O'Brien on LBC did a really interesting thing where he looked at the 10 Chilcot principles that came out of the inquiry into the Iraq war. And they're basically principles that a government should follow in time of conflict. And O'Brien went through them, and it was pretty clear that Starmer had followed them to the letter. So he had, you know, unlike Blair, I mean, Iraq was his tragic moment as a prime minister. It was a terrible mistake. I think he's learned those lessons. And I can also understand the kind of pressure he's under, which has led to him shifting his position as the conflict's gone on. But I think he's been impressive. He's been impressive on the world stage. He's been impressive on Ukraine, and obviously impressive on Iran. I would have liked to have seen more with Gaza. I think the stain of accusations of anti-Semitism in Labour under Corbyn had an impact on the way that Starmer spoke about what was going on in Gaza. And I think it's a shame that the government didn't take a strong line on what Israel's been doing there. You can't have everything, can you?
No. Well, yeah, he's definitely been running on a fine line in the global stage with his kind of bridge role from Europe to America, seeming like he's kind of been having to pick between the two on certain policies, as well as I think he's clearly recognised with Trump's uncertainty and his comments that he frequently makes, kind of undermining Starmer, that he needs to seek economic trade elsewhere, which I can see therefore comes through his meetings with Xi Jinping in China, how we have the accepting of that controversial embassy being built in the heart of London.
Yep.
How these are all seems to me like ways that we can connect with China to strengthen trade with them as the second largest economy, rather than just holding a backbone approach to America as our one and only, which seemed to be the plan after Brexit. And now that's kind of having a bit of a change as we look more towards the EU as well as our partners to make it not just dominated by America, right?
Yeah. And it's been interesting over the last few days to hear senior Labour politicians being very clear that Brexit was a big economic mistake. And that we should be striving to form closer ties with Europe. It's also been really interesting that as Starmer has stuck to his principles, particularly on Iran, that other European leaders, they're kind of coalescing around each other. And it's also, I think, done a really nice job of revealing Trump for what he is. If you stick to principled positions, you know, your allies will coalesce around you, and it kind of reveals people like Trump for what they are, narcissists, basically.
I think that's a very interesting point that you make. One of the last sections which we'd like to move on to is kind of about your expectations on what a Labour Party that aligns with your vision of a Labour Party does as such.
Yeah.
So you could quickly just run through some ideas that you have, et cetera, things like that.
Or
if you completely agree that the current Labour Party is doing what you would like a Labour Party to do, then you can say that too.
Yeah, so I would like to see more. So I care very much about, obviously I care very much about education. State education in Britain has been catastrophically underfunded for a long time. And I would like to see more funding go into education, more funding go into state schools. I think economically we're a long way away from that. And obviously the current war in Iran is making that even harder. I think Labour is doing a good job of protecting and preserving the NHS so that it's fit for purpose well into the 21st century. But as always, there's more to do there. I would like to see more, but I'm also aware of how difficult it is given uncertain economic times. The more that Labour can do to improve the working rights of working people, to make society fairer, to distribute wealth better, to improve life chances for people who live on the margins. I think if they're able to accomplish that, we'll see people turning to reform less. That is a major concern that I have. As I said before, populists offer simple solutions to very complex problems. And I worry about the lurch to reform. They're giving people permission to be racist or prejudiced, which, just wasn't a thing when I was growing up in the 90s. I thought that battle had been won, but sadly not. So I would like to see more. The economic circumstances make it tricky. But I have hope.
Perfect. Oh. I think that was brilliant. Honest.
It's honestly a really useful insight. It's especially in how over the next 5 years or such, foreign policy may change hugely in the UK. How we look at certain global issues with the rise of a lot of other parties. How that's going to make foreign policy much more static and ever so changing. Today we've covered lots of different topics, how UK politics is slowly moving beyond a simple Labour versus Conservative dynamic, with more parties beginning to show their worth, seen in those by-elections. However, if we look at it as a whole, this shift isn't just about these domestic elections. This affects how the UK governs, it affects how it negotiates, it affects how we're perceived internationally as well. So a more fragmented parliament, I think we could conclude that that creates challenges, but also kind of reflects democracy adapting to these new voices, to these new policies. But I think ultimately the rise of these parties is a reminder that political systems really are never static, and changes here in the UK can ripple hugely across the global stage, which we see with trade with America and Britain and China. And in conflicts as well, such as Iran, such as Gaza, such as Sudan, all of the topics that we've been covering too. But that was great. Thank you so much, Mr. Morris.
Thank you very much for coming on.
And we'll see you next week on the Oval Office. Thank you very much for listening, everybody. Bye-bye.